Let's go ahead and it's 2 o'clock, so Cherie or whoever wants to do a roll call. Cherie, you want to do it, and we'll Garvin can affirm that we have a quorum and we can get started.
You got it. I show that we have Jason Gomez, Roger Harris, Carlton Tidwell, David Bristol, and Kenny Weldon. We have Carvin and Monty as well.
All right. You have your quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, no. I think it's 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, it's not 2 o'clock, right.
We're gonna call the meeting to order. At this time, the public telephone line will be unmuted. Members of the public may comment on any of today's agenda item. If you wish to do so, please announce your name, city of residence, and agenda item which you're speaking. Maximum of 3 minutes will be permitted per speaker. At the conclusion of this opportunity, the public telephone line will be muted for the duration of the meeting. Do we have anybody wishing to make a public comment?
We have no one on the public line.
Having heard none, we'll entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes of March 10, 2020, or discussion of same. Hearing no discussion, do I have a motion to approve?
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion we approve the minutes.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Same for the minutes of the meeting of March 17, 2020. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Is that David and Jason?
Yes.
That's right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The committee chair updates, strategic leadership committee. Kenny, do you have anything?
Well, I guess we've got an update on our efforts to have a strategic planning session. Christina, you want to provide some input on that?
Sure. So we had met with the strategic leadership committee and talked about the path forward, because our intention was to have the in-person sessions first beginning in March, and then we delayed all of our timeline to begin in May. And so now here we find ourselves in May again. And we spoke with the leadership, the strategic leadership committee, and they were interested in hearing from TIP Strategies. And in between that time, we reached out to TIP Strategies to have them come to the board meeting and also discuss the timeline and present us with different options based on their past experience of how they've done this with other entities, since our timeline is becoming squeezed, for lack of a better word. And we met with, David met with us with his internal management team, and we talked about our capacity to accomplish what we set out to accomplish now. And we feel that it would be best served if we were to delay that and do 2 half-day sessions in the late summer, early fall, just to allow time for all of us to be available, just have more mental capacity to be available to think about these key priorities, both board staff and the board members, to think about, you know, what you really intended and what you would like to see us accomplish under those key priorities moving forward. Once the dust has settled a little bit more and we have a firmer grasp of what the future looks like. So David and I contacted Kenny yesterday to let him know what our recommendation was, what we would like to do, and feel that we would be able to best deliver on. And Kenny, I won't speak for you, but that is what we're proposing that we move forward with.
So the recommendation, and just to reiterate, is to delay any effort on the part of the board to delve into the strategic planning effort until, what did we say, 1 July at the earliest?
Right. So instead
probably
of having
September.
Yeah. Right? Instead of having TIP Strategies come to the May meeting, we'll and you'll see them on the board agenda. We will ask them to come and do that initial introduction to the board, just to kind of shift focus of the board so that they're mentally preparing for the September meeting, at which we will have the first half day session. In all honesty, dates have not been assigned to when this will happen. Once we decide that this is in fact the path we're moving forward on, we'll start looking for opportunities to schedule those two half day sessions and probably seek feedback from the board on whether or not we want to make it a long meeting in September to allow the full time that it needs for a half day session at the end of a board meeting, or if we just want two half day sessions that are special meetings, not board meetings.
Okay. Any discussion? I'm in total agreement with that. As a matter of fact, I just got an email canceling our board of directors meeting for Trade Association July 15th. So I think that's probably realistic.
Roger, I have a comment for you. When you look at those three priorities, we are learning so much right now about all three of them. Childcare, you know, childcare quality, community outreach, and our stakeholder, our partnerships. We are doing things that we've never done before in all three of these categories. So we're in a learning curve leading up to this when we actually start engaging the board. So we're learning a lot right now.
Yeah, I think everybody is. Anything else on strategic leadership?
Well, I'll just add to that just one final thought from my meeting yesterday with David and Christina, is that the idea that I think David's touching on right now is that the whole organization is in a crisis management mode. But to that, these updates that have been provided is in a way cataloging a lot of that thought process and evolution of perspective that is another strong argument for delaying looking at a strategic planning process, because there's so much that can be garnered from that information moving forward that if we step back and look at it, it'll really help us moving forward as well. I also said that I think it's important that we don't wait so that the information becomes stale, that we move into this effort as quickly as possible when it is reasonable, because the thoughts will be fresh in our minds, and it will influence our thought process, hopefully in a positive way, to look for the momentum that those new processes or new thoughts have placed us in. So I want to thank David and Christina for their efforts to work with the staff to do that, but to do so every day, thinking about how can this information be used in the future. And I use the analogy with them of Hurricane Katrina, or 9/11 for that matter, the retooling of major processes could not have been done during the crisis, but the crisis was large enough that it forced some very new and different approaches to things that were much better on the backside of it. And I think that's the perspective that we need to take going into that. The idea that Christina presented also of kind of having a mental break so that the board can really focus on this will be really important. And so Roger, be looking to you and the rest of the executive committee to determine when you think that timing is right, so that we don't wait too long, but we also don't press too early. So just that's all we had to report.
I think that is an excellent point. As a matter of fact, I was going to say, Kenny, you're talking yourself back from September, because September, we probably will be leaving some of that on the table, forgetting some of it.
Well, it's going to be, you know, I think the next, you know, every month there ought to be an assessment of what timing is right. As a disciple of the OODA loop, as for you, David, you know, observe, orient, decide, and act. I mean, it's a constant, I think, plan to September now, but we should reassess that and be prepared to do more sooner if things are, if it looks like it's right then, instead of just saying, well, this is what we know now, this is all we're going to do, we won't be able to adjust appropriately.
Yeah.
Right. The same token, you know, that there could be a, you know, a second occurrence and, we'd be, in a virtual state, that prolongs past September. So it's yet to be known.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. I think the what was that expression? Oogle loop?
OODA. OODA. Observe, okay. Orient, decide, act.
I'm going to remember that.
Air Force Colonel John Boyd.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. I've got some comments that later in the agenda that kind of play into that, but maybe I'll bring it back up when we get there.
Okay.
Anything else on strategic leadership?
No, thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes.
The policy recommendation that will be coming forth on the target occupations, maintenance and development of the target occupations list.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we're going to be bringing that forward, and it's got, some adjustments, but I think it's the timing of that, we're going to need to get approval. Mm-hmm. So that'll be coming forward as well.
So I've got a comment on strategic leadership. It's not related to Kenny or your committee, but holy cow, what an opportunity to visit the real reason why this is all in place. If we don't have any long-term strategic leadership, we end up in some of the negative public relations stuff that we're in today. So I agree with everybody to, you know, put this off for a little bit, but this whole crisis has shown where we have to have appropriate strategic leadership to serve the communities we're supposed to be serving. And the reality is that TWC as a whole, this has pointed out perhaps some gaps in their strategic leadership over time. And this is opinion, sorry, it's editorial opinion, but I want to just emphasize, and I'm not a deep thinker like Kenny, but boy, we sure got caught unawares and unprepared as a entity for the TWC, and we've taken a huge amount of beating in the press for our performance as not just the board, but the TWC overall. So I'm not in favor of delaying it too long, because we got huge things we need to work on just for our board. So that's an editorial comment. Sorry.
So when you refer to the beating in the media, PR, you're referring to the UI?
Yes, overall. But that is the ability to apply, the ability to receive benefits, the ability to get an answer. And I know there's been a huge amount of work being done now, but we didn't have that, like Kenny was talking, you know, you got the time, the effort, the ability to sit back and think and plan for crisis management. I don't think the TWC organizational level or childcare that we ever really, you know, they talk in business, it's the black swan events. Well, this is a double black swan event for the state of Texas with COVID and oil crisis. So, The PR stuff is one thing, but then you have the real hurt on the ground of people not getting money to be able to buy groceries and stuff. So,
right.
So, I want to be sure to clarify, there's a lot going on right now in the response to COVID. So our strategic planning efforts, they really are for the next 4 years out and, you know, what we hope to focus on. But I don't want to leave the impression behind that we're not actively working to respond to the current crisis. I think there will be a lot of learning and a lot of opportunity to consider how we might do things differently moving forward when we're not in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, so I don't mean to imply that there wasn't a lot going, isn't a lot going on. What I was getting at is the usefulness of Kenny's committee and the reason for it being so valuable to what we're doing. That's why I didn't mean to imply that. So I apologize.
Yeah. So let me give an example of how to bring these two together: the crisis management with the strategic planning, and I'll use 9/11 as an example. Because as a result of 9/11 and the immediate effect of it, our North American defense mechanism understood that it had no internal looking radar systems to monitor bad guys from inside the CONUS. All of our radars looked outside. Okay, that was an immediate crisis identified strategic deficiency that then, when the crisis was over, turned into a strategic initiative to correct. And so that's when I say paying attention to what are those radar examples that are going on right now, so that when the smoke has cleared, we can begin to create an internal looking radar system where none existed prior to 9/11. So that's what I think our task together is, you know, to catalog some of these type events. And they may not be as specific or as drastic as that, but they will kind of rise to the top, so that then the strategic process, planning process, can say, how do we create, you know, long-term solutions to those?
I would add to that, David, I don't think this is going to be the quick meeting we thought it was going to be. I would add to that, that although you mentioned Katrina and 9/11, we've got a much more recent 2008 that a lot of us worked together with on the board. And the one thing that I remember vividly was the amount of underemployed. As a matter of fact, that kind of got to be a buzzword. And taking it one step further, thinking along these lines, you know, our CEOs and the board of directors of COG are all people that have a substantial impact and interest in the success of their counties. We could create or figure out a way to utilize them or work with them or develop programs to work with them to work more on, you know, while UI is doing what they do, and we have little involvement with that, but we do have quite a bit of involvement through the centers and the programs that we do on a day-to-day basis. But what we saw in 2008, the reason we had the underemployed was we just didn't have the jobs. But we do have the ability to interact with our CEOs and the board of directors of COG to work with them, work with the EDCs, and try to create the jobs, which in my opinion would be a lot easier than trying to find people jobs, albeit a lot of them would be underemployed. I think a lot of our efforts would have much better return on investment by working, trying to create the jobs and working with the CEOs and the economic development people, if we could come up with some kind of a platform or program to do that. As a matter of fact, I kind of wonder why we don't already do that. But moving on with the agenda, unless anybody else has comment. Okay, nothing.
Well, I would just say one thing, Roger, just before we leave my community, and I think is I sit and listen to discussions in higher ed talking about this same thing. This tri-agency initiative has got to be given some teeth or something to bring together these great minds as a way to not just so there's got to be a governance and a process in place, I guess, to look at some of these things, and we can't do it alone, but we obviously could be part of a group effort that might be renewed, which I think as I look back at the other crisis I was bringing up, what it brought to bear was the need for multi-agency response to these things that each, given their own abilities, are incapable of actually doing, and that is solving the problem themselves.
Well, I agree with that assessment. I think the issue here and what you speak to is leadership. And that's why we're on the board, is to provide the leadership for this effort in our 14 counties.
Yeah.
Ironically, I'm on the executive committee of TOB, and I would have the same comment with that perspective, is somebody's got to initiate the leadership, and the best, easiest way to do that is to come up with an example or come up with a program. I mean,
right.
if the criteria of the program is solid, it'll sell itself. So I think we're in a very unique position to vet that, not to mention a unique point in time that it's very badly needed. Anything else on strategic leadership? How about workforce development? Jason?
So the committee met February 25th. There was a recommendation for board policy regarding the WIOA needs-related payment. Unfortunately, I was unable to be there for that committee meeting. So Dana is going to discuss just briefly that board policy recommendation.
Good afternoon. It was a policy on needs-related payments, which are considered a support service for our WIOA eligible adult and dislocated workers that are participating in training. So the policy, we currently did not have a needs-related policy. We did several years ago, but we were able to accommodate the support services through our traditional support service policy and the programs and efforts under that policy. So just recently with COVID, we realized that this was an opportunity to add needs-related payments back into the system. So that policy went to the WD committee and it was approved, and it will be going on the consent agenda for the board meeting.
Great. Anything else workforce development related?
No, I mean, there was an update from David on the COVID, but obviously I'm sure there's gonna be an update today. So that's all.
Okay. On the Oversight and Accountability Committee?
We did meet, and we received both a financial update and our performance updates, of which you guys will see, I guess, on March the 19th, if that meeting is still on. And the rest of our meeting was a discussion on David's COVID-19 update. And Ben, I see it down here on as number D, Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, I'll just skip my part of that and let that come up in David's report.
Excellent. Okay. If with nothing else on the committee discussions, we'll move to the procurement update. And I understand Mary Ford is going to handle that.
Yes. Good afternoon. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, during the month of February, the North Central Texas Council of Governments released two major procurements for workforce. The first one was for the provision, the oversight, the management and operations of our child care services program. And that RFP was released on February the 6th. We had a pre-proposal conference for that RFP on February the 20th. and proposals were due back to us by no later than 2 p.m. on March the 20th. And at that time, we did have the official opening, and we received one sealed bid, one proposal, and that was from Res Care Workforce Services. And although we only received the one proposal, under TWC's direction and their guidance, we consulted with them. They advised us to move forward with our evaluation process, which we did. We moved forward with that evaluation process. We had five external independent evaluators, as well as two internal evaluators that provided feedback regarding the fiscal and monitoring sections of the proposal. And out of the 505 maximum possible points that Res Care could have received, they received 367 points. So since Res Care is our current child care provider, the current subrecipient to provide our child care services, there will be no transition period. The initial contract period will begin October the 1st and go through September the 30th, 2021. So the Workforce Board staff will continue to work with Res Care staff to continuously improve their performance in our child care services program. And recommendation for contract award to Res Care Workforce Services as the Workforce Solutions Child Care Services provider for the next fiscal year will be made at the May 28th COG board meeting. And so that was the first major procurement. The second one in February was also for workforce, and it was for the management and operations of our workforce center services. That means all of the 11 workforce centers we have throughout the 14 county area. That RFP was released on February the 27th. And we held the pre-proposal conference for that RFP on March the 16th. And proposals were due back by 2 p.m. on March the 30th. And at that time, we had the official opening of the proposals, and we received four sealed bids, four proposals. And those proposals came from Career Teams, Dynamic Workforce Solutions, Serico, and Res Care Workforce Services. So we began the proposal evaluation process on April the 1st, and that went through the 13th, and that's with individual evaluations as well as team evaluations. We had five external evaluators and two internal evaluators that provided us feedback on the fiscal and monitoring sections of the RFPs. At that time, Res Care Workforce Services had the top overall average score of the four proposers. And we began pre-award for that on April the 20th. And because Res Care is our current contractor for our Workforce Center services, again, there will be no transition period. And the new contract period will begin October the 1st through September the 30th. And the recommendation for that contract award to Res Care Workforce Services as the new Workforce Center service provider will be made on May the 28th at the COG board. So at this point, that's a very high level overview of the two major procurements that we had in February that are now complete and up to go before the COG board. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to entertain those questions. And if it's something that I can't answer, I'm sure David and Dana will be ready to also answer those questions.
Any discussion or questions? Okay, very good. Thank you, Mary.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm sorry, Roger. Sorry. I couldn't get to my unmute fast enough. So so I want to make sure. So we've put out the one for the child care, and they were the only bidder, Res Care.
That's correct.
What would we have, and is there a passing score for a bid, i.e. you said it was 360 points out of the 500, I believe. Do we establish a minimum passing score?
Well, for this one, it was not a minimum passing. It would be the best bidder. It would be the one that had the highest score, plus, you know, any other things that we saw that we needed to look at and determine if that was the best bet, the best choice for what we were looking for. But in this case, we had no one to compare them to.
So, a silly question. Why'd you go through the evaluation?
At the recommendation of PwC. Yeah. And David can speak to that as well.
Okay. So, thank you, Mary.
When you fall into a situation like this, it's called a sole source. And although, you know, typically a sole source is where you're procuring something and only one company can provide it, such as a particular software program or an individual piece of hardware that is patented or has, you know, intellectual rights. So, although technically not a sole source, we proceeded along TWC's sole source path to establish why it should be qualified under there, and they were involved all along the way. If you do the math, I think the grade that ResCare received is something like 72%. And typically for a bid to qualify, we when we're doing it that way, is 70%. If they rise above that threshold, if they don't write, if they can't even get to 70%, they're not even considered a viable bidder. So that's why we went the way we did. We removed that floor just in case we had multiple bidders, and we had the opportunity to consider everybody that applied, no matter whether they were above that floor or not. So we were trying to open our options up by doing that.
Okay, I get that. Thank you. It just is concerning that we cannot, there's no other bidders out there of any sort.
Of the timing, we expected some other bids, but because of the timing and the, shall we say, fluidity of what's been going on in childcare, which if you've been reading our COVID updates, you know, we've been all over the place with childcare, and that's anecdotally, we heard some feedback like that. You know, we just don't have time to fool with it right now. So that's kind of why we're where we are. It doesn't preclude us from, you know, it's a one-year contract with four annual renewals. So nothing is off the table going forward, of course.
David, this is Monty and the board. David, I would like for you to refresh our memory on, you have worked very hard in the past whenever we've discussed this item to work with the service provider to respond. And you've had a lot of tepid response out there. So I don't want to leave the board with, oh, you know, we wait for a little while, we go out again, we'll get a bunch of responders out there, because we have not experienced that traditionally in the past. And David, you may want to speak to that.
Yeah, we had, let's see, even as far back as 2015, we had multiple bidders. And of course, you know, we started to go out last year, and last year was another time. Childcare has been very fluid for the last 2 to 3 years. And so it's not been a good time for other providers to look at our program and say, yeah, that's something we want to try and bid on. Much of which is because they've had a lot to say grace over in the work that they already have. So I think there are some external factors that have been affecting that. And we had hoped for a different outcome, but at least we had one bidder.
David, I've got a question for you. The way you just phrased that, you said bidders that look at our program. Is there something about our program that differs from others that make our program less attractive in a bidding situation?
Just the performance issues that we've experienced and our need to be in this ramped up mode we have been in, which I was just looking at one of the child care reports this morning, and actually prior to the COVID hit, ResCare was making progress on, we were meeting performance. We had met performance for a couple of months and then COVID hit. And of course, you know, with what's going on with COVID and all the crazy things they've got us doing for childcare now, we're not, performance is kind of is off the front burner because we're doing, you know, we're not enrolling kids outside of the essential worker population. So our focus, ResCare's focus right now is to work the redeterminations very expeditiously and keep those kids in care as much as we can, although we've got waivers to keep everybody in care for, I think, up to 90 days. So, you know, it's a totally different world than it was a year ago or 18 months ago. So I think that's affected our struggles over the years, I think, have led to some people saying, I'm not sure we're ready to jump into that arena yet. So, and I'm just being honest there.
Thank you. Now that you mention it, has there been anything from the state, any comments about loosening up child care for people other than essential workers?
No, there is not. It's the topic of conversation almost on every call, which there's one at 2 that Kelly's going to have to jump off here and get on at 2. No, and it's actually child care licensing or HHS that has imposed that on us. And until we get a little further down the road, I don't think we're going to see them loosen that up at all. We've got so many things that they're doing right now to try and make sure that we've got got child care for these essential workers. And you know, we've talked about some of those in the updates, the 25% overpayment to providers that are staying open. And there's two or three different things, the stabilization grants that are coming out that are gonna starting, I think June the 1st, to help the ones that aren't open. So there's just a lot going on in that childcare arena right now. It's pretty epic.
Right. Well, you know, I understand the analogy, but you know, Texas is one of the first states on the reopening scene, and you know, we've reopened to a point that a lot of people have gone back to work. It's anticipated next week there's going to be even further opening. And childcare is going to be front and center next week. If people can go back to work, but they can't have their children in childcare, I mean, that's going to be a huge void and another opportunity for Texas workforce to be in the headlines.
Yeah. Kelly, did you want to comment?
For what?
You're muted. Kelly? I guess you can. Can you hear me, Kelly?
There you go.
Kelly? Oh, well. Yeah, I agree. And it's not like there's a deaf ear in Austin about it. They're hearing it regularly from all the boards. And we're just going to have to see how long they or how long the regulatory bodies that oversee this think we have to continue to keep things shut down. I'm sure it's a question of money. They don't want to, they want to have the money there to serve these essential workers and the kids that are in care and pay the 25% over and these stabilization grants. So they're just not ready to run the risk of overspending by starting to enroll the regular populations.
Okay. Okay, anything else on the procurement update? Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Connexus debrief. So if you'll recall during our strategic retreat, I think it was, where Selena came in and moderated, she mentioned a couple times this group up in Michigan that is very unique to the workforce scene. And I would agree with that statement after talking to them. So a month ago or so, staff and I had a Zoom meeting with three people from their staff, the executive director, two other individuals. It's rather interesting. And so this group has a workforce board in Michigan. Workforce Solutions is called iWork. This workforce board handles the three Southwest counties, which have St. Joe, Benton Harbor, and quite a bit of agriculture, although I believe those counties would be considered relatively high density. Along with the iWork, they have a entity called Connexus, which have the same board members as the iWork workforce board. They also have other interest parallel to workforce, one of which is one that they started called Youth Solutions, which is a statewide program that they started and they manage, and they get money from grants and donations from businesses, working with at-risk youth across the state of Michigan. I was kind of surprised when I was talking to David Bristol to hear that he was from Michigan. I'm from the south side of Chicago, which is very close to Michigan. So for those that aren't aware, Michigan has a lot of cities that have, I would say, decaying manufacturing, a lot of manufacturing. Almost every city in Michigan has a name that you hear mentioned in car parts. Lansing, you can look at the map and see the name of clutches and transmissions. And a lot of that industry, as you know, is in kind of a rebuilding state. As a result, there's a lot of opportunity for at-risk youth. They're very proud of this program. Apparently, it's quite effective. They also started and manage a entity which is called Manufacturing Growth Alliance, which is sort of a statewide trade association. Along with that, they have kind of a trade school for teaching, I'll say, machining or manufacturing skills. In addition to that, and kind of because of their job placement and the work that they do with workforce, they've had a lot, and the Manufacturing Trade Association, they had a lot of requests for working with the employment and the employee side. So they started a company, I'll say, called Change Agents. I believe that might be the only for-profit entity that is under their umbrella. And in that entity, they do HR consulting, where they do employment manuals, they consult on employment-related policies and programs. In addition to that, in one of their counties, Van Buren County, they do the economic development for the county. So these guys have really use the common interest and I'll say funding capitalization other than workforce, your conventional workforce revenue streams, to build a organization that works with the communities in various ways, obviously ways that are specific to their needs. And they do a very interesting approach. They do apparently a good job. One comment that they made was that they had determined that the employer is who they feel and want their client to be. There's quite a bit of discussion about education, skill development, and I will remind you that the city to their immediate east, Kalamazoo, is the city in Michigan that was in the press not maybe a year or 2 years ago, that apparently either a business or a very wealthy individual created a fund assuring every student in the city of Kalamazoo was able to go to college. They would pay the tuition out of this fund. And apparently that's a that's something that you're hearing a lot of come out of the state of Michigan. Not just about Kalamazoo, but apparently they're trying it on several different levels across the state. The other interesting item that I picked up off their website as I was looking for my notes and had to reconstruct these, on their website, they have accolade best nonprofit to work for every year, 2017 through 2020, best managed nonprofit, Michigan 2020, cool place to work in 2019, and then another best place to work that I didn't catch where that came from. So it's a very interesting group. Again, we spoke to their staff. I am really curious to see what their board of directors are like and what the leadership is and where the catalyst that created this came from, whether it was board directive or these guys on the staff who were pretty impressive, brought it about. Does our staff that was on that call have any further comments or any discussion points relative to that?
I'll just say it was interesting. I mean, they're almost like in some ways they're a consulting firm. They've got these various subsidiaries that they have created under the Connexus umbrella. And, you know, they are very, each individual subsidiary has some niche in the market that they're kind of focusing on, like the youth solutions that Roger talked about. The interesting thing there is they had the agreement, if I understand it right, of all the other boards in the state to operate as that conduit between the state and the board. So they're kind of serving as the middleman in that the wholesale distributor. That was interesting. But they've got an HR flavor to a couple of these subsidiaries where they actually do our HR counsel, not counseling, but consulting. And so, you know, we'll pull the onion, peel the onion a little bit with them, maybe try to go a little deeper with them once we kind of get a little bit further down the COVID road. But it's a very, very interesting model. And they ended up being, this is something they did out of necessity, and they've been at this for what, I think they said 7 or 8 years. And
yes.
Just didn't happen overnight. You know, they started with one and then they grew and then they grew. So I think they kind of did it out of necessity. They seem to be a relatively small board in terms of the WIOA funding that they received. So I thought it was very interesting.
Any comments, discussion? All right, David, you want to take COVID-19 update?
I will. Cherie, can you set it up so I can share my screen?
Well,
While he's pulling the screen up there, Roger, I just wanted to make one comment about the. I pulled up their website while you were talking, and you know, I think one of the challenges that's faced today by the workforce is being able to have a almost like someone to help walk through the process. To, like you said, serve as a liaison, be it through interpretation or computer literacy or, you know, what other aspects of taking these government programs or service provider programs and providing that bridge of information. And so it's a, it's an interesting, like you said, niche that they've found. It's really the bridge between the workforce and the services. I see as a real need, and so it's an interesting interesting concept and capacity.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Void filler.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would also say that. Now, I guess this is my impression. It wasn't really stated, but I kind of got the feeling that people in the state of Michigan just get to the point where they realize there's not a cookie cutter, there's not a specified approach. And if somebody is going to help them get out of their economic dilemma that they were in, it's going to be them. It's going to be happening from internal, not external. Well, keep in mind that Michigan, Detroit specifically, was the city that they got to the point where they would just about pay somebody to come take houses that were dilapidated, to take them down so they didn't create all the problems and baggage on community that would present. I mean, it definitely was a city that deteriorated far below where most places go before they get retooled and back on the tax roll. Go ahead, David.
Moving on to our COVID update. I'm going to bring up my last COVID update that went out last Thursday. This is what I did with the committees. Can everybody see that? So, yes. Kelly, are you still on? I guess not. Okay, so again, this is just a position report on where we are across several different topics, and in just to make it clear the environment we're operating under. This is what things looked like last Thursday. Things have changed on several of these just since last Thursday. So we'll be doing this update again this afternoon at 3. We'll have a conference call with staff and with ResCare, and so you'll be getting an update this evening. But I thought I'd go through this and just, if you've got questions, certainly we can address them, but it's kind of a position report. So we try to talk about those ES staff that we transitioned over to assist with UI claims. And they've changed kind of the way they're feeding us the data about what they're getting done. So they've gone to, okay, here's what they did in the last 10 days. So as of last Thursday and the 10 days previous to that, those were the numbers of errors, EDO2s, PDUA, and CT10s that our 34 people had operated on and resolved for UI. Now, what's changed since last Thursday on this, and Dana, weigh in here with me, keep me on the straight and narrow. We are hearing from TWC now that they are ready to start considering the retasking of the staff that we have had working for them. Y'all kind of edged around this. David, you were edging around a topic that is right up front for us, and that is the way UI was perceived in this pandemic, because the system wasn't built for this type of an event. That brush fire has been on one side of the fence, on the UI side of the fence. That brush fire is getting ready to jump the fence and come into the workforce pasture. And we are doing some things. We're having some discussions with the state. I think our number in our 14 counties, I know it's one point, it's almost 2 million claims in the state. And those are going to start transitioning when the state says, oh, by the way, now we're going to do away with that waiver for you people that are drawing UI. You're going to have to start doing job search. And so that's when the fire is going to jump the fence and come into our pasture. So we're having some conversations with the state. One of them is, can some of these, we could start retasking this ES staff, because what we have to do is we have to work with these claimants. They have to have a full WIT registration completed in order for us to work with them and be eligible for, you know, Wagner-Peiser funding and other funding. So many of them have not completed their WIT registrations. And so we're going to see the tide start shifting and heading toward us. So we're trying to make this transition while we know it's coming, and we're not engineered to deal with this much load either, but we're going to do the best we can. We've actually gotten some additional funding from the state, and it's going to allow us to we'll have some of these ES staff coming back, so they're going to bring capacity. And then we're also going to hire, or ResCare is going to hire some temp staff to also be dealing with this population. And we're working right now on those numbers. It's going to be in the teens probably, because we didn't get all that much money. So that is right up front in terms of what's going on. Dana or Randy, either y'all want to weigh in on that at all?
You pretty much captured it all. We have the information to submit to TWC. They gave us our funding, and we're actually working on those numbers, as you said. And UI volunteer staff that have been doing these claims and actually working on behalf of the UI call center, they're retasking several of them for some new efforts, and we're trying to get some of them back into our fold so that they can do work for us again.
And I'll touch on a couple other things we're doing when I get a little further into the update. The second bullet, I continue to list that so that people will have easy access to that data that's coming out of the state. Adobe Sign.
David, question on that. I've used that link for the county-specific UI data in the past. For some reason, it's not popping up now. Is there any issues on that? I can get zip codes, I can get house districts, for some reason the county one's not. Have you heard any?
I'd have to ask Michael if he's seen that. Do we not have county data populating?
It was in there before and it's not, so that's the only reason I question what's happening.
We'll ask that question for you.
Thank you. We'll
figure out what's going on there. All right, just a second. My screen's acting up, so I'm going to reshare here just a second. Okay, Adobe Sign, we've ordered the initial licenses we need to allow us to start using electronic signatures for case files. That just increases our virtual capacity. There, TWC issued a checklist, and that's regarding the eligibility for UI payments. When claimants are notified, they can return to their previous job, and for whatever reason, they choose not to. There's some pretty staggering numbers. This addresses the concern that, Anna Coker raised for her staff. They're actually making more being out drawing unemployment and the COVID amount for unemployment than they make day to day in their regular job. So that is prevalent across a wide portion of people that are in the UI system. So the state is working on the parameters under which they would, if somebody's offered their old job and they choose not to go back, what are the things that enable that choice to be made? And some of them are, you know, are they infected with COVID? Are they the primary caretaker for somebody that is COVID? Do they have kids that they can't get childcare for? Those types of those things. So we furnished that list with this. So that's what's going on with that. We issued a survey to our employers, the employer needs assessment, and we've asked them what do they need coming out of this? What do they need from us? What do they need from the employees? What training they might need? Christina, is there any update on how many responses we've shared or we've received?
Actually, no, it continues to stay open. We had 67, I think, on this update that we provided, and we're leaving that open because employers are still working through some of those training needs. They're very broad in what they're saying to us. So we want to leave that open and explore any funding opportunities that they might have once we see those materialize, once we see a trend of training needs that are identified.
And that's open. We're going to leave that open for a while longer, right?
Yes.
So this is the link to that survey. So if you want to continue to share that with your network of employers, the more input we get, the better it will be for us.
David, question on that. Because one of the survey questions kind of slowed me down a little bit. It was about the employer tax ID, our EIN number, the trainee's social security numbers, wages, hire dates. What in a survey, we're just trying to find out if they would provide it?
Yes, our funding requires that if we go out for an SDF grant, what we're asking them is if they're interested in any, if they have any training needs, and if they say yes, would they be willing to provide that information, because it is a requirement of TWC.
Okay. So has everybody said yes on that 67?
Well, not everybody said that they needed training, but the majority of those that did need it did say yes. I don't want to step too far outside of my lane, but what I have been told from Brandy in the past is that sometimes, and if an employer is not willing to personally provide that information to the training provider, then they will ask their employees to do so before they sign up for the training. Instead of just the employer not giving out the information, the employee will give it directly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so one of the things that tells us the state's focus is changing a little bit is that we're beginning to get a lot of requests for data on what we've been doing, how we've been serving job seekers, how we've been serving employers. So we have a request for data from the state, and we're working on preparing that answer to them. And one of them is, what have you been doing for UI claimants all along? And so we've reported on that and how we've been doing it. But actually this week we are, and I think this went out, right, Christina?
I'm sorry, David.
Have we started the outreach to the targeted mass outreach campaign to the UI claimants?
That one is going out tomorrow. Today, we are sending UI claimants information on a virtual job fair. And tomorrow, we will send out information on WIT registrations.
Okay. So we're beginning that outreach. It's a mass outreach. We've got tens of thousands of people out there that are going to need some assistance getting back into the system, finishing their WIT registrations. And so we're working on doing that. We're actually talking about we had already started preparing video versions of many of our orientations, and we had prioritized those back when we started. One of the ones that got prioritized last because of it wasn't a requirement at the time was the RISI, and that's the one that the state sends us to list. The state says, outreach these people and bring them in for an orientation and start working with them. So we are working on that RISI orientation this week to get it set up, and we are having discussions with the contractor about how can we outreach the maximum number of participants. So building on our success and the knowledge we gained from Commissioner Dimmerson's webinar that he did, we have well over 300 participants on that. We're looking at the Zoom webinar tool to do that because we can track attendance. We know who logged in, how long they were there. We've got some data that typically you have to have for some of these orientations because they're required. So we're discussing that, and I think you could end up seeing us do some mass triage on large groups of people with these orientations. So stand by for that. We're just at the beginning of that. But again, it's delivering these services virtually in some way. Child care, it's in constant flux in terms of the providers that are using the systems to serve essential workers. You know, we had a little bit of discussion earlier in this call about what we're doing and why we're doing it the way we are. We do have some changes in the supplements for the open facilities that we talked about. They're still getting their 25%. And then those that are closed, there's gonna be a little bit of a change coming up here before too long. And that will be that they count, what their state is doing is they've taken an average of a child care budget and what goes to the amount of money that it takes to basically provide the facility. That doesn't include staff and all of that. And they've come up with a percentage, I think 9%. So that's gonna be their stabilization grants. There is a list of requirements that these closed child care providers have to certify. And then if they do that, then they will be eligible to apply for one of these stabilization grants. And what TWC has done is they have basically sent the money down to us, and we're the ones that are gonna be doing that checklist and sending those checks out for the stabilization grant. We will update our essential worker data today. I would not be surprised if we're over 1,000 kids in care. As of last Thursday, we were at 857 with a number of applications that were pending and either pending provider selection, so that means they were ready to go, or almost 400 that we need to get responses back from participants. So that's moving along well. Randy, Dana, I think the number, our target number for the budget we were given now is 3,000. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Initially, it was 6,000, but based on some of the additional supplemental type payments they're wanting us to make, like the 25% supplement, some of these others, they're telling us it's going to be closer to half that, so around 3,000 kids. And what I mean by 3,000, that's for 90 days this summer, 3,000 kids.
So we will probably be able to go over that amount because, you know, the front end is a little light, so the back end could be a little heavy, but we'll be watching our budget very carefully. I talked about the stabilization grants, and this is driving, it's driving a couple of things. It's driving increased interest in in providers that are not currently serving our children, but have expressed an interest in it because they've seen how the system is kind of working to protect the providers. At least that's my opinion. And then also TRS, we are working this group very hard to further our penetration into our providers that participate in our Texas Rising Star program. Let's see. We have on the topic of providing supplies to our providers, and this is not just our providers, this is all childcare providers in our region. These are supplies that they are going online and ordering, and those orders are going to be bulk packed and shipped to us. We expect to start receiving them late this week, early next week, and by the end of next week. Our goal is to have all this stuff here, get it packed up, and then we're planning to have a delivery times for them to come through. They're going to drive through the parking lot of the COG. We'll have traffic patterns, and we're just going to load them up with their stuff and get them on down the road. So that will be starting next week. And as far as childcare providers working from home, childcare staff working from home, we reached the maximum there, and they have 44 of about 60. The rest of them are still new, and it's some of the management staff that's rotating in and out. So so that is the update. And like I say, you'll be getting a new version of that this afternoon. Let me call on staffs. Anything else that's on the front burner right now that you would like to let the board know about?
I think you hit it.
Okay. It's
a good opportunity to do admissions.
Hey, we are, we're like many of you, we're just, it's almost something new every day. Roger went from making or laundering tablecloths to making face masks, We keep getting a lot of requests from the state to provide information about, well, tell us about all your providers. I think there was, Kenny had one down in his area that had shifted their production capacity over from something they regularly make to something that would support the recovery or the response to COVID. So we've reported on a number of those. And I know there is a lot of interest even above leadership of TWC, probably at the legislature and the governor's office to frame how we're responding during this time. So we're trying to provide as much upward stuff as we can to them so they've got something to show. And that's all 28 boards are doing the same thing.
Good. Any comments, discussion? David, you want to go on with the upcoming board meeting format?
Yes, I will. So,
Can I interrupt just a second?
Yes.
I want to go back to something because this idea of this delivery and pickup from providers, who's actually doing that, David? Who's physically doing that?
It changed dramatically from the time, this is when I say things change day to day to day. So when this originally was proposed, we were going to get these bulk shipments of products from a company, and then we were going to outreach of providers and figure out what it was they needed. We were going to package their packages, and we were going to deliver them to them. Well, that kind of went off into the ditch with TWC for a lot of reasons. So then they negotiated with this company to provide an online marketplace that these providers could go in, and they're paying for it. They're paying for it out of their pocket. This isn't a giveaway, but it is a resource that they might not otherwise have available to them. So those that have been having difficulty getting some cleaning supplies and things like that, they can go online and order that. And then this company is going to bulk ship. They're going to aggregate all of that demand, ship that to us, And we've already got rooms set up to stage that in the COG. And we will be, it will be a distribution center. We're going to be going and picking. We've got their order sheet, their manifest for what it is they ordered. We pick that. We're going to put it in a garbage bag, a big bag somehow. And then as they come through, we'll go out. They have to bring a copy of their order with them. And we'll just be dispensing the product to them. And then they go on their way. So we're hoping after we get it all and get sourced that we can push it out over a couple of days.
Well, let me just make just three quick observations. One, that is phenomenal effort on the part of the staff to mobilize to do that, because I think I hear in that the we is you. I mean, it's the folks in the COG building that are actually doing that. It is above and beyond anything that you were expected to do before this. And so that, I mean, that's just incredible to highlight and for us to applaud, I think, and to figure out a way to say, hey, look what people are doing to, as Ken Hatfield would say, make it happen. So, you know, thank you very, very much for that. And I think we need to celebrate that somehow with all that's going on. The second thing that I want to mention in this is a radar example that I was talking about, where here's an online service that is providing a consistency of delivery across providers in a logistics chain that did not exist before. And we've got to find a way to capture that thought as we try to increase our provider footprint to demystify what it is at all that we need to do. And I don't know how that can materialize into something, but I think there's two things to glean from that at the very tail end of what you were talking about, David. So you know, I just want to just celebrate, you know, what y'all are doing. I know there's still a lot of work yet to do, but I mean, that's incredible to hear, and just really want to thank you for that. And then secondly, let's really think about what's happening here with this supply chain movement here that's really in many ways revolutionary in its thought. And obviously it costs money to provide that consistency, but maybe that's some of the void that's been missing that is some middle pieces there. So Roger, thank you for letting me say that.
Yeah, and it is.
Thanks for pointing it out. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it is. It's staff that have volunteered to come in, and we'll be practicing all the CDC recommended behaviors to ensure everybody's safety. It's kind of a brave new world. The upcoming board meeting. So Carvin, are you still on here? I had your picture. Oh, there you are. Okay, if you would unmute, because I may need for you to weigh in here. But so this meeting today is under the waiver issued by the Attorney General that waived a lot of the Open Meetings Act requirements for y'all to meet telephonically or virtually like this. That expires tonight at midnight. So next week, we don't have the cover of that unless there's a last minute reprieve and they extend that those waivers. So what will happen next week is Roger will have to come. He has to go, the presiding officer has to be wherever the public can show up to participate in the meeting. So Roger has chosen to come to make that the COG location. And then the rest of y'all will be able to participate like this virtually as long as we have a quorum. And so that is the methodology we're going to use for next week. Carvin, how'd I do? What was my score?
You did pretty good. I'll give you 100% on that one. The only thing that I would add is that the governor is actually talking right now, and I have another one of my attorneys listening in on the conference call, and we may know something within an hour or so whether or not the governor is going to extend the waivers. The waivers are tied to the declarations, and the declaration expires, as you said, tonight at midnight. The governor didn't extend the declaration in April until, you know, the day before. So it would not be unexpected for the governor to extend the declaration this afternoon sometime around 4 o'clock, and then we'll know what we're dealing with. So
So the public comment line next week, no matter where Roger is, he's either going to be at the COG or in his office where he is right now. And we'll use that public comment line if Roger is remote. If he's not, we'll probably have it available either way, just to err on the side of ensuring public access. So that's kind of the trappings around how we'll do the board meeting next week.
The only thing that I would just throw out as a suggestion that some of my other clients have used on the public comments, we do have a right to set some reasonable rules. One of the reasonable rules that has been adopted is to require a person who wants to participate in the public section to let us know ahead of time by giving us their name and phone number, so that we give a list to the chair or the presiding officer, and he literally calls on those folks one by one by one, so that we don't get a log jam on the phone line. And if no one has called ahead of time to register a desire to participate, then we have taken the position that we just proceed on, that no one is called in, as opposed to like today, Roger asked for any public comments and then he paused and waited. If somebody had wanted to comment, they would have jumped in. But if there had been 4 or 5 people wanting to comment, Roger would have been juggling, trying to, you know, bring some order to those 4 or 5 people. So you don't have to do it that way, but that's just one way that seems to have worked for some of the other entities on that public comment part.
Should that be part of our posting?
Yes. You would just post that and say, if someone wants to participate, you need to let us know, give us your name and phone number by, say, 4 p.m. the day before the meeting, something like that, just to give your staff time to process the list.
So I guess the only other thing that I'd like to bring up is that because, you know, there's a couple of critical things on that agenda. Do we want to hedge our bets and post for the executive committee also that day in case there is not a quorum of the full workforce board?
Yeah, that's absolutely your call. But yes, several of my entities have been doing exactly that sort of thing, posting meetings both ways. And if you are able to do a virtual meeting, then you just cancel the live meeting. If the virtual is no longer possible come tomorrow, then you obviously just throw that posting away and you proceed with the traditional meeting.
Okay. So Roger? So
I'll give you my update here. I do think you should notice it as an executive committee meeting in lieu of a board, so that you can take that opportunity. And the presiding officer of that meeting is actually going to be David Bristol.
Okay.
I prefer the virtuals one.
Get that to the governor ASAP.
Yeah.
Is this a battlefield promotion?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Okay, anything else, David?
Let me look here. Let me get back to the right agenda here.
While David's looking, can I jump in there and just make a comment on some of the particularly relevant to the strategic planning? You talked about meetings and retreats and board meetings. I just want to remind you guys, you've heard me say this many times. If you're meeting in a quorum, it doesn't matter how you label it. You can call it a retreat, you can call it training, strategic planning, whatever. It's still a board meeting. It still has to be posted and we still have to comply with the rules.
Good reminder.
I'm checking my email again to see if my attorney sent me anything. I keep looking, but no, still don't have anything.
So, yes, Roger, I'm done.
Okay. On the May 19, 2020 Workforce Board of Directors meeting agenda, to include requests for any item to be added or removed from the agenda. Has anybody got anything on the agenda that they would like to offer input, add, delete.
Based on our discussion, we'll be removing item 2 under the Strategic Leadership Committee tip strategies. We'll delay, we'll postpone them until the July meeting.
Okay. Anybody else?
Christina, one thought is the, can you scroll up on the agenda, whoever is monitoring the screen? The procurement recommendation that we're working on. Christina, where should we put that? Oh, you're on mute, Christina. Sorry.
Scroll down past the committee updates.
Okay, sorry.
Or B. There they go. B and C.
Thank you. I just didn't see it all the way down. Thank you.
Yeah, we got it.
Roger, I would just point out to you that conducting executive session virtually is almost impossible. So if David's in charge, I'd recommend against it. You can still post it. It doesn't matter. But the probability of actually being able to do it is slim and none.
Okay. And to clarify, Carvin, you want to weigh in. I can't see what the top of that section says, but the items having to do with the workforce system procurement, child care service procurement, that is going to be a recommendation to staff to take it to the COG?
Yes, that's what we want.
Yeah, I have.
You're not approving the contract, you're receiving the process that we went through, and you're recommending that we proceed to enter into contract with the two successful proposers for those two procurements.
Right. Can you scroll down a little bit? I want to see what the section is labeled that those items fall in the other way.
Up, what's number four? What does number four say? There you go. You're good, Roger.
Okay. Okay. Anything else on the agenda? Anything else on any of those agenda items? Okay, so we're not going to have an executive session, so there won't be any action as a result. And under other business, I've got a couple items. First of all, I want to thank all the committee members. Obviously, we couldn't do this without these committees and contributing to the meetings. It's even more important now that we've got to do all this virtually. For everybody's knowledge that doesn't know it, wasn't aware of it, David Bristol ran the reopening committee for Judge Hill in Collin County. And I wanted A, to tell David I thought he did an incredibly good job, and B, give him the floor to provide any comments that he learned doing that, and if he's got any comments about reopening the economy that workforce would be interested in hearing.
I will. Thank you for that, the accolade there. But the items that I learned are doing a Zoom meeting with 31 task force members and 30 elected officials is extraordinarily difficult, especially elected officials who prefer to be the individual spokespeople for their community. I understand it completely. And a whole lot of diversified interests from industry groups, from restaurateurs to construction to real estate. And in fact, it's still an ongoing. The call that I stood up and took was from Judge Hill there, Roger, just so he's got an update for Collin County. The biggest thing that we see is all of the businesses in Collin County, we can all be open. You can say you're open, but you don't have the public confidence to actually operate a lot of these businesses. So we feel that the biggest issue, for instance, I was in a restaurant last night that even though they could have 25%, there was probably 10% of the restaurant occupied. So, and I'll throw a lot of other businesses out there like that. The difficulty is going to be building public confidence in both our medical response and then in our ability to operate safely. So, so I look forward to a Zoom meeting next week with a whole bunch of workforce board members and managing that. So.
Well, David, maybe you need to get the webinar version where all they can do is type away in the chat box. They're muted all the time.
Yeah, I didn't. Is that what the difference is? Okay.
We can talk you through if you're interested.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, actually, he had that for the first part of the meeting. He had everybody muted and all they had was the chat function. The problem was the chat function got so long that there'd be new ones added before you could
keep up. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was very interesting. David Setzer, you're involved with Ellis County, was it?
Yeah. Judge Little invited me to participate with their committee. Attended a couple of meetings with them, and I shared their report that they came out with Roger and David, so he could kind of see what another county was doing. Of course, a little bit smaller, different environment. Every county has got its own issues, but it was just another opportunity to get in front of employers and people in the community that don't know who we are and don't know the things that we can do, and that's been, I think that's one of the things that's going to be very interesting coming out of this is, much like it was in 2008, 2009, we're going to reach a whole nother group of people that have never worked with us before and never used our services, and hopefully we won't screw it up and we'll do a good job and have some more people in our corner going forward.
Hey, Roger, if I can go back just to compliment David and the staff there. For our task force, I did call on David to help David and his team to get some data for us. And a lot of the things we discussed and brought forward came from this workforce staff. So thank you, David, for doing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, if I recall, Michael was helping him on some state numbers.
Data, yep.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm on his favorites list, but Judge Hill has my cell phone number, and he's not bashful about using it.
Yes.
Yeah, Judge Hill, he gets what he wants. So it was during that period of time that led me to start thinking more along the lines of trying to assist the employers or the elected officials in the community to create the jobs, opposed to reacting with the job placement, which is what we do. And part of that was based upon the fact that it was becoming obvious that we can open these businesses back up, but if they don't have consumer confidence or they don't have confidence in the marketplace, we're just not going to get the economy back. So I think workforce should really kind of broaden its view, because we are one of the few entities that are funded in a way, have the contacts that could really do what I would call economic development. Contrary to those that get tax money to fund it or use general funds to fund it, we probably have the contacts and are better suited to create jobs, which is what, I mean, economic development loves sales tax. They love rooftops. They love all kinds of things, but they pay more per job than just about anything else on economic development radar. And I think that might be worthwhile vetting. Another thing I wanted to mention was I listened into the knob call Friday. Did anybody else on staff listen to that? The knob call with, I forget the gentleman's name, but Painter.
Ron Painter.
I thought it was kind of interesting. It was definitely more operational than board member, or maybe I should say board members must be more operational than I am. So the Ron Painter facilitated the meeting. Most of the discussion was from the executive director of Long Beach Workforce Board, which I thought was kind of interesting that Long Beach would have an have a workforce board. But it was kind of a interesting discussion. They never close their workforce centers. And the executive director of that workforce board is included in the city leadership. The traffic in the centers, which he said typically was 200 to 250 clients, and I would imagine that's a week, could be a day, but I don't remember the unit of measure. That is down to 50%, which is about 25% what they normally saw. The interesting comment that he made was the vast majority of those visiting the centers were there to use the computers for work searches. The rest of them that were there for training or educational needs. He never mentioned that people were going to the centers for UI. There was quite a bit of discussion about various programs and how they interact with different states. But the other item that was brought up several times was how important it was to survey businesses to see who is going to be there when things open up and what their needs were going to be, which I see on your updates we're doing. But I thought that that was very interesting to listen in on that. Another item I wanted to say was along the lines going back to the discussion with David and David working with the counties. I want to thank Mike Eastland. I know he's there, probably muted, for sending out an email to all the county judges and CEOs asking for workforce board member participation in the planning groups for reopening the economies. I thought he did it. He put together an excellent email, and I think the timing was perfect. So I want to thank you, Mike, for doing that. And that is the extent of the notes I have. So unless anybody has anything else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. We have a motion in 2 seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? We stand adjourned. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.